Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me as always is a man whose jams are hotter than a $2 pistol. He is the Captain.
Well, thank you very much, Pistol Pete. It's good to be seen and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today we are drinking Bonehook Pilsner from beautiful, beautiful Naples, Florida. Garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. Captain, I was down at the Bonehook Brewing Company just a few weeks ago. I was in there undercover sampling the different beers. Mm-hmm. And I say, if you are in that area, be it for vacation or something else, you must go to Bonehook. It's a fun place with lots of great Bonehook beers. And while you're there, try the Pilsner.
Bonehook, you say?
Yeah.
That was my nickname in college.
Well, how about that? And today's round of beers was brought to us by, first up, we have Jay Tallruth from Sweden. He's a regular poster on our blog at truecrimegarage.com. He says, Captain, the True Crime Garage Army is very, very strong over in Europe.
Let's let the Winter Olympics decide that.
And a big thank you goes out to Miguel in Odessa, Texas, and a shout out to Anne and Lucy in Palm Harbor, Florida.
Oh, Lucy, I'm home.
And a big We Like Your Jib to Brinley in Henderson, Nevada.
Thank you to Taylor in Nashville, Tennessee, FYI, home of this year's Crime Con event. And last but not least, a long distance cheers to Jesty in Melbourne, Australia. So thanks to everybody for the cold beers for this week's show. If you want to help us out with next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
And if you haven't got your Crime Con tickets, check out crimecon.com and use our promo code TC Garage.
All right, Captain, that's enough of the business. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
What is your emergency?
I'm at a friend's house. He's out of town, and I came here to check on his wife, and she's dead on the floor.
Okay.
The address
okay.
is...
Okay, stay on the line. Hold on. Yeah. Stay on the line.
Yes.
Okay. You're doing very well. Good job. Just a moment. We're going to connect you. They're going to ask for the address. MLS Empire. What is the address of the emergency?
21034 Jarvis.
All right, repeat the address one more time for me.
21034. Police and a bomb picked up.
Okay, you said 21034 Jarvis?
I'm sorry, 27034.
Okay, and repeat that one more time.
27034 Jarvis.
Jarvis Road. Okay, and is that a house or an apartment, sir?
The house.
What's the phone number you're calling from? Tell me exactly what happened.
My friend, Teresa Siebers, she's a doctor. I'm a doctor. She came home last night. Her husband is in Connecticut, and she was supposed to go to work at 9 o'clock. She called me, and I was on my way into work, so I swung by, and she's dead on the floor. And there's a hammer at the side, and she's bashed in the back of the head.
Okay. All right. Stay on the line with me, sir, okay?
Yes.
Stay on the line with me. Sheriff's Office, are you on the way?
Yes, we are.
Okay. All right. And so you said you're a doctor?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are you with her now?
I'm outside of the house because I don't know if there's anybody in the house.
Okay. All right. So how old is Teresa?
She's 50-ish. 47-ish.
All right, sir. And is she awake?
No, she's dead on the floor. She's
okay.
Cold.
And
the back of her head is bashed in, and there's blood everywhere.
Okay. All right. So I do have paramedics, fire department, also law enforcement is on the line with us. Okay, they're going to be going out, okay?
Okay, okay.
So I want you to stay on the line one moment. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay here until I get here because, I don't know if anybody's still in the house.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Just stay on the line, okay? The sheriff's office has questions, and they're going to counsel you on what to do next. So
okay.
Yes,
sir, are you inside the residence then?
No, I'm not. I'm standing in the driveway.
Okay. And then when you walked inside the house, you said the blood was dry, or what did you say?
Yeah, half the blood is dry, half is wet. And she's cold. She's dead cold.
Okay, and there's the hammer sitting next to her, and you had left it, and
yes.
Did you touch anything?
No, I did not touch anything. I touched her, I shook her a little bit,
okay.
And she had cold.
All right, one moment. You're doing really well. So the last time you had seen her is what time?
Probably 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
2 or 3 weeks ago. Okay, and you said she returned today?
I don't know when she came back, but she was supposed to go back. She was supposed to go to work today at 9 o'clock, and her husband called me from Connecticut to say she didn't show up at work, and she's not answering her phone. And he checked her. He tried calling. He was going to call her mom, and he said, if you're swinging by, can you swing by? And I knocked on the front door, and nobody answered. The lights were on. I could see her purses on the countertop. And she didn't answer. I pounded, and he gave me the key code to get into the garage door. I opened the garage door, and the door leading to it was open. One of the dogs ran out. I don't know if he left or not. And I walked in, and I just opened up the door. I walked in the door, and she's dead on the floor. And there's a big bash in the back of her head.
Okay, is the vehicle at her house or no?
The vehicle is at her house, yes, in the garage. The garage door was closed.
Okay, and when you left, did you left the same way you entered, or did you leave the front door?
No. I touched her, and I just freaked out, and I walked outside.
Okay, when you walked outside, did you walk out the front door, or did you walk back out the garage door?
Back out the garage door, and I closed the door because the dogs were there, so I did touch the handle.
That's all right. You just went through the... I'm sorry, just a moment.
Yes.
So you went, I'm sorry, you just went through the front door or the garage door? I'm very sorry.
I went through the garage.
Okay, that's fine.
Door.
And you entered you exited the same door. That's fine.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Okay, and so you were there because they asked you to take care of the house. Is that correct?
Mark, her husband, called me to say, please, can you check on her because it's not like her not to show up to work and be late.
Okay, so, and I know you told me before, but when, after he called to check on his wife because she wasn't at work.
Correct.
All right, and
I only talked to him once.
Okay.
And he gave me the code number. He sounded a little, you know, whatever.
And he received a call from work saying she wasn't there?
I don't know.
Okay, that's fine.
You know, he's her office manager.
Oh, she's the office manager of his business?
No, he's the office manager of her medical practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where is he right now?
I believe he's in Connecticut. That's what he told me.
Okay. And you didn't see anything else, I mean, other than...
No, I didn't go in the house. I'm afraid somebody's in the house. I mean,
okay.
Somebody killed her.
Right.
I mean, it's a murder. Right? She's bashed in the back of the head.
Okay.
You know, I can't see her falling or anything like that. I just looked and I thought, my God, you know, she's my friend.
Right, exactly. You're doing a really well, you're doing a fantastic job. You did a great job. The deputies are en route and so is the ambulance.
Yeah.
And you're doing a fantastic job. I'm sure they're going to have a little bit further, you know, more questions and everything for you. You're doing great, okay?
Okay.
I did let them know that you're outside.
The fire guys are here.
Okay, great.
And, let's go. Yeah, she's dead.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and hang up with me.
Don't hang up?
No, go ahead and hang up with me, okay?
Okay. Goodbye.
All right, bye.
You just heard the 911 call. And then later the news came out that a mother of two identified as Dr. Teresa Ann Sievers, 46 years old, was the victim of a homicide in Bonita Springs, Florida. This was on the morning of June 29, 2015. And the Lee County Sheriff's Office authorities were asking for anyone who had heard or saw anything in connection to this to call them. Now, Teresa was found on Monday at 9:45 a.m. after the Lee County Sheriff's Office responded to the 911 call from the neighbor. Employees at her office, this is the Restorative Health and Healing Center in Estero, said that she didn't show up for work on Monday despite having patients scheduled to see her. Neighbors said Teresa was a loving family woman and they wanted answers. They are now left asking who could have done this to her. Kimberly Torres lives next door and said an investigator came to her house 3 hours later and told her that her neighbor had been killed in a very gruesome manner.
And again, the cops are asking for any suspicious activity to be reported.
At the same time, authorities also advocate basic safety precautions to everyone in the area, especially persons living in the immediate area. This including locking doors to homes and to vehicles. So now we have to wonder, why was a mother of two killed and by whom? Here's some background information regarding the victim. Now, Teresa Ann Grace Tottenham was born November 19th, 1968 in Derby, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
She was the daughter of John and Mary Ann. She was the third of four children. Teresa had a sister and two brothers. She would graduate twice as a valedictorian, first from high school in 1986 and then from Fairfield University in 1990 with a master's in science and biology. In 1996, she graduated with honors from Ross University School of Medicine. She completed her residency at the University of Florida in Jacksonville, where she was awarded Resident of the Year, then became board certified to practice medicine. In 2003, Teresa met Mark Sievers. Mark was a nurse, and at this point, Teresa was a recently divorced doctor. They met in 2003, and it was a quick courtship. They were married not too long after in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Then 6 months later, Mark and Teresa had their first daughter. Then after the couple moved to Bonita Springs in 2006, Teresa opened her practice and was on staff as well at the Naples Community Hospital. For those of you not familiar with Bonita Springs, well, it's sort of wedged between Fort Myers and Naples, Florida. There's a lot of 4 p.m. dinners going on, if you know what I mean. In 2007...
What does that mean?
There's a lot of
old people.
Yeah, there's a lot of old people having dinner at 4 p.m. And
I thought it was like a sexual thing that I didn't know what you're talking about. A lot of 4 p.m. dinners happening.
Oh, yeah,
you
that's,
know what I mean?
Yeah, that's some slang term you didn't know about.
Not sexual at all. It's just a bunch of old people eating dinner.
Yeah.
Maybe that's sexual to some people.
In 2007, they had another child, another daughter. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Seavers practiced, she practiced holistic medicine. Her motto to her patients was, "I'm passionate about empowering you to tap into the doctor within you." In her free time, she strongly supported local charities, giving back to the community. In 2008, she became directly involved with an organization called Our Mother's Home of Southwest Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a teacher to teen mothers and their babies.
Well, her practice was interesting because it was kind of a blending of Eastern and Western medicine practices.
Now, with a husband and two kids, why was Teresa home alone? Where was the rest of her family when she was attacked, when the attack occurred? Well, as we heard in the 911 call from the neighbor, the husband, Mark Seavers, called the neighbor asking him to go and check on Teresa. The neighbor says on the 911 call that Mark is in Connecticut, or at least has told him that he is in Connecticut. Yeah. So a little timeline of what was known early in the investigation. The neighbor was correct in his statement to the 911 operator. The Seavers family of four, Teresa, Mark, and the kids, had been in the state of Connecticut. In fact, Mark and the two daughters still were in Connecticut when it was discovered Teresa had been attacked and killed. Teresa had family in the state of Connecticut. The four went there as a vacation and to visit with family. Some people might think this is a little strange. I do not think that it's strange that we have them traveling separate. There was some event, some family event on that Sunday in Connecticut that they did not want to miss. So rather than miss this event, Mark and the two daughters attended this event while Teresa prepared to leave, going to the airport and flying home. On that day, on June 28th, Teresa sends a text to her husband saying, "Call me when you're on highway and know where you're going." Now, at some point, and I'm sure a lot of us have done this, I know I have, Mark may have accidentally tried to FaceTime his wife because she texts, Teresa texts back to him.
Right.
"I'm not FaceTiming an airport, I assume was by mistake as we just hung up." And to which Mark Seavers then responds, "Yes."
Mm-hmm.
So that evening, Teresa boarded a plane. She flew out of Connecticut. She landed at Southwest Florida International Airport.
On the Sunday.
Yes, mm-hmm. Sunday night. This would have been late at night, arriving at the airport around 10:30-ish that night.
Mm-hmm.
When she lands, she then calls Mark to tell him that she has arrived safely. Teresa is then spotted on airport surveillance cameras walking through the airport and rolling her bag just behind her. According to the timestamp on her parking receipt, she departed the parking garage at 10:55 p.m. Now, it's about a 25-minute drive from the airport to the Seavers' home. She drove her van home, pulled into the driveway, opened up the garage door, and parked the van inside the garage.
And we're assuming she shut the garage door.
Yes, she closed the garage door. Now, it was at 9:15 a.m. the following day on Monday that Dr. Teresa Seavers, she's not shown up to work by this time. She already has patients that have supposed to have seen her.
Right.
So the office calls her husband, Mark. They call his cell phone. And they say, "Hey, she's not at work." He seems alarmed, and he calls the neighbor. The neighbor, his name is Mark Petraits. He goes over to the home, and he finds Teresa Seavers dead on the floor and a hammer beside her body. Mm-hmm. He calls 911. Now, the people living in Teresa Seaver's neighborhood, they are all in a panic after they've been told what had happened. They're being asked by police if they have seen anything, heard anything. You know, the police were asking about any suspicious behavior in the neighborhood, if anyone had heard any dogs barking late that night. And of course, they're asking all these questions of the neighbors, but they're not being told anything other than that there was a murder and it was gruesome. So they're pretty panicked right now. They're wondering, was this a break-in? And if so, are their homes and their lives in danger? Right. Is there some kind of madman on the loose? Tuesday morning, the day after her body was found, a sign was placed on the office door of Teresa's practice. Mm-hmm. And the sign read, "Attention. With much sadness, we are to inform our patients that on 6/29/15, Dr. Seavers has passed away. With all due respect, we ask everyone to minimize the questioning as it is still under investigation. Prayers and donations are more than welcome to her family, as anything and everything will be grateful at this time of sorrow. We appreciate your understanding and patience, as the practice is still at a standstill temporarily until further notice. We are acquiring physicians to transition all of Dr. Seaver's patients, but at this time we have a doctor extending his professional courtesy temporarily for emergency medication purposes only for the next 30 days. Dr. Seaver's office is open for phone calls and messages, but please allow 24 hours for a response."
All right, so Sunday, Dr. Seavers gets back. Monday, her neighbor finds her.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, the cops were there Monday. The cops were there Tuesday. Family returned Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much where we're at.
Right. And the investigators, like you had said, Captain, they were there all day Monday, all day Tuesday. Detectives returned Wednesday morning to continue the investigation. At that time, they had called in the Southwest Florida Criminal Justice Academy members, a team of academy members, to help them comb the area. They were seen combing through a high grass and land area at a park across from the scene. Then at this time, the Lee County Sheriff's Office, they were asking neighbors to remain vigilant, and if they have seen any suspicious activity, to please report it. So this is 2 days after the body's found. They're asking the neighbors to remain vigilant. You know, mm-hmm. that's scary. They've not presented them any information.
Right, but as one of the people in the neighborhood, you'd start assuming that they're the angle that they're proceeding with is that it was a break-in.
Right. Yeah, because they keep asking the neighbors for information. The people, have you seen anything? Have you seen anything strange since then?
But we have no sign of forced entry.
Correct. Now, also on that Wednesday, employees of a home security business arrive on the scene as well, and they spoke with detectives. Neighbors and media had spotted these people from the home security company not only talking with detectives, but entering and exiting the Seaver's home. From talking with people in the area, nearby neighbor, this is what the police had gathered, sorry, from talking with people in the area, a nearby neighbor, Damon Laporte,
right,
said that he had heard arguing Monday outside. He said that he also had noticed a red car in the driveway, in the Seaver's driveway, twice last week, and he had never seen this car before. There are other reports of this arguing or yelling that this man had heard. And from what I can gather, there's a bit of a loose time frame on what time this would have been for the arguing and the yelling that was heard in the area, but it would have occurred between the hours of 5 and 6 a.m. Monday morning. So just about 4 to 5 hours before Teresa's body was found.
Seems like there's more questions than answers. Let's get right back to this after a quick beer break.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Everyone is still talking about Monopoly Go. for a good reason. It is an absolute hit. Millions of people pass go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Like countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Or timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums. Delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches. Unique playing pieces and so much more. The verdict is in. With Monopoly Go, there's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now free on the App Store and Google Play.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out BetterHelp.com/garage today.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
All right, cheers, mates. We're back.
We are back, Captain. You said it perfectly right before the break there. A lot of questions, not much answers. And I wonder, you know, I have to think to myself, what questions I have, what questions do you have when we look at this thing just after days into the investigation when we're not being told anything?
Well, the obvious question is this a break-in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. You know, you have to wonder several things. One, how did the attacker gain entry into the home? And two, what would be the motive? You know, did someone break into the house and Teresa comes home unexpectedly, startled the intruder, and then is attacked and killed?
And right, but we hear our argument that Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So she comes home Sunday night. That means she'd be alive the whole time when the intruder's in the house. until Monday morning.
Well, maybe a break-in in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and what was the time of death? We don't know that at this point.
Right.
And you also have to wonder if, you know, could somebody have followed her home, saw her walking alone at the airport or driving alone? There's several 3-4 lane roads on that route.
Mm-hmm.
You could pull up to a stoplight, look over to your right or left and see a pretty woman driving beside by herself, follow her home.
Right. And all we know from the 911 call is that her body is cold.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming from a doctor. So we don't know how, you know, I don't know how long it takes for a body to become cold. He says that her head is bashed in.
Mm-hmm.
Does he mention the hammer in the 911 call?
Yeah, he does. And I'm glad you bring this up because this is where I think we have to go from here. When we don't have any information, I think we can look to this 911 call and see what we can gather and piece together. So as you said, he finds her, the neighbor finds her dead on the floor.
Right.
He's calling from the driveway. By this point, he has fled the house.
Right.
He states that he did see the hammer laying next to her. And he says that half the blood was wet and half the blood was dry.
Okay.
In his opinion. This is interesting, too, because we have, you know, an expert opinion. It's not the same as, you know, myself running into this scene and discovering the body. This is a person that kind of knows what to look for and probably can describe these things better.
He knows what to look for as far as, you know, the medical side of things, but mm-hmm. he doesn't do autopsies and stuff. I'd argue that we'd have a little more knowledge of looking at a crime scene than maybe this individual would.
Yeah, he does.
But question for you.
Go ahead.
He leaves the house. Would you leave the house?
Yes, and he states specifically that he left the house because he wasn't certain if whoever had done this was still in the house.
Well, and he's clear that she's dead, so I don't fault him for, you know, she's dead. There's no point of him staying there in the house if the intruder is still there, or intruders.
Well, and I think we can assume this, that we know he touched her, right? Because he says that the body was cold.
Right.
So we know that by his own admission, he touched her. So there's a chance that he saw her lying there.
Mm-hmm.
His first reaction as a doctor, somebody that's able to help, is probably, let me check her pulse. If she's still alive, I'm going to stay here and try to rescue this person.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. He touches her. She's cold. No pulse. Get out of there.
Yeah.
One thing that was smart by this, this poor guy that happened to stumble upon the scene, he exits the home the same way that he came into the home.
Yeah.
So he's not going to contaminate the area anymore.
Well, everything he touched, he was able to tell the 911 reporter, even though she wasn't really paying attention to anything he was saying.
Mm-hmm. Now, he states that he had started by going to the front door, knocking several times.
Mm-hmm.
This was after he was contacted by Mark, who had told Mark, or had told the neighbor, that he had tried calling Teresa's phone several times and nobody answered. He says that through a window, he could see Teresa's purse on a countertop.
Mm-hmm.
Mark then gives the neighbor the garage code. He gets in to the garage and he says that their van is parked in the garage, as he would expect. The door to the house is unlocked. And when he went in there, he states something about one of the dogs got out.
Right.
So she's attacked in the home and they have what sounds to be two dogs or maybe more dogs, because he says one of the dogs ran out. So one big thing that tells me, just personally here, I'm going to kind of eliminate the break-in theory. I find that the break-in theory to be very unlikely after applying what is gained from the information provided in the 911 call. You know, the thought that maybe there was a break-in and is interrupted when Teresa comes home and then she's attacked, the intruder attacks the homeowner. My first thought would be what I would consider to be an obvious problem with that theory. First off, if you're an intruder in the home after dark and Teresa comes home, you have fight or flight, right? I would think that flight would be the most likely by far for several reasons. One, it takes a special kind of lowlife to kill someone. So just in choosing fight instead of flight would be a smaller percentage. Then we know that she parked her vehicle in the garage. So unless this intruder is making a lot of noise in the home, they would have heard the garage door, this giving them some kind of extra time to flee. And you would also know what entrance the person or persons returning to the home would be entering, so you could flee through a different exit. If you heard the garage door, or you know someone is arriving at the home, but you don't know how many people, you know, this all seems more reasons to run rather than to stick around and right. and hold your ground.
Yeah, you don't know if, you know, it's a group of football players that live there, unless you case the house.
The other thing that seems strange, Captain, and I don't know anything about these dogs, so I'm not going to pretend to know if they're giant dogs or little dogs or if they're the most friendly dogs in the world. I have no clue, but there's what we believe to be two or more dogs in the home, because we can get this from the 911 call. The dogs they weren't attacked. They weren't locked up.
Right.
So the intruder seems to just be chilling at the house with the dogs. It seems very unlikely to me that she returned home to startle somebody and then they're startled to the point where they attack her.
Yeah, more plausible that somebody followed her home. I mean, somebody could have been just at the airport, sees this, she's small. I think she's only 5 foot something, like maybe what, just 5 foot.
Yeah, like I think she, someone had stated she was 4'11".
Yeah, so she's small. She's an attractive woman. And so somebody could have been following her home.
And she's obviously alone.
Right.
And what I mean by that is if you view the footage of her walking in the airport, it's not even like there's nobody even walking anywhere around her that you could mistakenly think they were with her. She's alone.
Right. A lot of people would assume that this lady is going to be picked up. You know, somebody's going to pick her up from the airport. That's normally what happens. But her car was parked there. So they could have followed the car home from the airport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you have to risk it if you do follow her. Is she returning to a home where there's somebody waiting for her?
Yeah.
You know.
But it's as simple. She opens the garage door. You see no other cars. You know, there's your in.
Mm-hmm. Now, the neighbor says that this is murder. He says, you know, this was a murder on the 911 call. So obvious to him, she was bashed in the back of the head, as he states. The autopsy findings that was released would reflect what the neighbor had told the 911 operator. Now, the autopsy is long, graphic, and frankly, when I can find them, I do read them, but they are always very hard to get through. We don't need to go through everything here, but I'll give you a summarized version with only the necessary details.
Right.
Teresa was found in the kitchen of the home, on the kitchen floor. Now, the neighbor says in the call she was hit in the back of the head. So I kind of assumed from the call that we were looking at maybe possibly a sneak attack. Maybe she was hit from behind and she goes down and it's a one deadly hit type situation, or the hit from behind, she goes down and then more hits to complete the job. No, from my eye here, and you got to keep in mind, my eye has only been trained here in the garage. It's an untrained eye.
And it's infected. He has pink eye.
Double pink eye. From what I read in the autopsy, Captain, Teresa saw the attacker coming at her because she was struck many times. And it doesn't appear to me that the attacker was able to hit their mark, so to say. She was moving.
Uh-huh.
Is what I believe. And she also attempted to block these strikes at her. There was bruising and marks on her left shoulder and even more bruising and marks to her right forearm. Like she put her arm up to kind of guard herself or shield herself.
Right.
While the scalp area would appear to have been the intended target from the autopsy, but due to the struggle, she was hit in the face and near the ears a couple of times. Eventually, the damage was done to the scalp, though. The medical examiner also received the hammer that was found lying next to her. It was described in the autopsy as a black hammer with a red handle. There was a good deal of blood on the hammer, and there was dark blonde hair found wrapped around the handle just under the head of the hammer.
Right.
She was hit 17 times, and judging by the size of the hits and the damage done in comparison to the flat side of the hammer head, it was the hammer that was found next to her that was used in the attack.
Yeah, which is not likely all the time to find the murder weapon right beside the victim.
Yeah, and left at the scene. Right. You know, very strange that this item wasn't taken with them. And now police were able to determine that the hammer did not come from, it didn't belong to the Seaver family. It wasn't like a disorganized killer showed up unprepared and grabbed the first thing he could find when she returned home.
Well, that I think shows premeditation.
We have to, I want to give a lot of credit to the Lee County Sheriff's Department for several reasons. And you know, I don't want anybody to be weird about this because I know it's sad that you have to give praise to people for doing their job, but we have to, because we have certainly seen plenty of cases, Captain, where for whatever reason, a law enforcement agency didn't follow procedure. Right. They botched the investigation, or this is the one that really bothers me the most. They just did a lazy, sloppy job. And my feeling is, Captain, is that's not the situation here, my friends. What I see early in this investigation is lots of thorough work being conducted by a smart and organized law enforcement outfit.
Mm-hmm.
They roped off the scene and they remained there, searching and processing the crime scene for over a week. This producing evidence coming from inside the home, obviously. At one point, they were spotted carrying out a door from the home. The door appeared to have been covered in possibly fingerprinting dust.
Right.
It was reported to the local newspapers and TV stations, people having witnessed technicians arriving and taking saliva and hair samples from the Seavers' dogs. At one point, they had the whole entire neighborhood blocked off. No one gets in, no one gets out. They brought in teams to comb the area in a grid search. They went door to door conducting interviews, thus getting the possible tip about the red car and then the noises or the argument heard coming in the 5 to 6 a.m. hour. Lee County was also questioning members of both Mark's family and Teresa's family during this week's time, trying to determine who had done this. They were also questioning people at Teresa's medical practice and people in her profession. So other doctors, people that had worked for Dr. Seaver, and this included patients as well. Now, some things started to stand out from these interviews. The first is while Teresa was extremely smart, hardworking, dedicated to her job and her patients,
right,
she was, I want to try to put this politely.
She was a pistol.
There you go. Yeah, she was a tough cookie. She was known to yell and get loud with some of her staff from time to time. I mean, it sounds like she was quite bossy with her husband, Mark.
Right.
And this was a little surprising. She was even known to have raised her voice from time to time at some of her patients.
Yeah, but okay. So, you know, she is a businesswoman. She has her own practice. Right. So mm-hmm. She is a driven individual. So my point is that if it was a man doing that, he would just be considered driven. Right. But sometimes people paint her in a light of that she's a little bitchy. Right. But
yeah, like, that word was thrown around a little bit.
And like I said, if she was a man running a business, they wouldn't call her bitchy. They would say that they wouldn't call the guy bitchy. They would say he's driven and he was a go-getter. That's what she was, you know.
Well, here's the other thing, too, and I think we have to weigh this against her, let's say, bossiness or how direct she was from time to time.
Right.
I think direct is the right word that I want. I weigh this against it. She's in the medical profession. She's mm-hmm. dealing with serious business, with serious issues. People's lives could be on the line, maybe not in this hour or this day, but eventually. Half those people are probably... You're either seeing her because of one of two reasons. Either A, you want to remain healthy, or B, you are currently unhealthy and in need of attention.
Right.
So I think there's no mincing of words with her. I think she's just saying, hey, look, we can keep you healthy, we can make you healthy, but you need to do this, and you need to do this and this, Right. And if you don't do these things, I can't help you. I can't make you do these things. You know, you lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink thing. And same thing with her, the people that worked for her. You know, they said that she was, they didn't say she was a bad person. They just said she was a firecracker. You know, that she wanted things done right. She wanted things done her way and in a timely manner. And if,
but that's also why she was number one in high school, number one in college, and she has her own practice.
Right. Yeah, so I think these are all traits that can be where some people might say they would be harmful, and you know that maybe she didn't have a good bedside manner about her. I would also argue that maybe when you're dealing with this type of business, life or death situations, sometimes people need a little tough love. They need direct, stern people to guide them and direct them, and hopefully it works and keeps them healthy. Now, one strange coincidence that they came up with, and one thing that kind of stood out regarding these investigations and interviewing some of the people that had worked for her, worked in her field and her family. And this is Sandra Hoskins. She worked for Teresa, and Sandra had been described by Teresa at times as a disgruntled employee. Dr. Teresa Severs and Sandra didn't always see eye to eye, and they weren't really getting along at work. And Sandra's husband, this is Frank, his name's Frank, had worked for Teresa as well. He had actually been let go just months before the attack. Sandra and Dr. Teresa, in fact, having such a rough time of it getting along in the office, Sandra was planning to turn in her resignation on the very same day, on that Monday, that the doctor, that Dr. Teresa Severs was found dead. Yeah, that's
A little suspicious.
Very strange.
Well, and so if it's not a break-in, right?
Right.
We have to look at who was she close to? Was there any motive? Again, like you said, investigating the patients. There could be a disgruntled patient. There could be a disgruntled employee. Maybe it's just Sandra. She was going to turn in her notice. And also the husband. Now, the issue with the husband is we have alibi after alibi because he's with his kids and family in Connecticut.
It's like 1,400 miles away.
Well, right. But on top of that, you have all these eyewitnesses.
Right. So Sandra, the employee, and Dr. Teresa, they're actually not getting along to the point where this was brought to the attention of the police by patients. So patients going into the office could recognize that these two were not getting along.
Right.
So that's when the police, they decide to bring in Sandra and her husband, Frank. They're brought in for questioning. This is on July 3rd, so less than a week after the murder. Now, her husband, Frank, when he was questioned by police, they wanted to know if he had ever had a sexual relationship inside or even outside of the office with Dr. Teresa Severs, his boss.
Right.
Now, we do have to mention that both Sandra and Frank, they were cooperating with police. They weren't, you know, standoffish. They didn't even hire an attorney. They went in there and they answered their questions. As are Mark Severs and his family and Teresa's family. You know, Mark even gave the police his cell phone and his computer, turned him over to the police upon returning from the trip to Connecticut.
Well, one of the reasons why they asked Frank, that which used to be like an office manager for Teresa, did you have a sexual relationship with her? You know, we have two married couples.
Right.
But when they get the phone records and they get the computer records from Teresa's husband, Mark, it comes out pretty quickly that they don't have the traditional marriage. It's kind of open.
Yeah.
They're also kind of swingers. So
they're kinky individuals by all signs.
And at that point, I think, you know, the cops are probably going, well, this opens up a lot more possibilities for motive.
Yeah, well, obviously an affair, any type of affair going on is going to bring up the possibility of motive, you know, and what the motive would be. Whether would it be the boyfriend attacking Teresa, or would it be the husband, the jealous husband, finding out? But the thing is...
Yeah, but you could be swinging with another couple that somebody got mad,
mm-hmm.
that the wife got mad, or... I mean, it just opens up a lot of possibilities.
So where I can't say for certain that this question threw Frank for a loop, I think that it was very well orchestrated by the police. This was something they were probably intending to ask anyone, any man that had a close relationship with Teresa, yeah. whether it be working or just friends.
Maybe, but I also think because he was fired, and they're probably trying to get down to the bottom of why he was fired.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Frank is a handsome man, mm-hmm. and he was also in really good physical shape. So maybe that they just assumed, like, here you got these two attractive people. She is an open marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this wouldn't put it past her, because as far as the rules of her marriage go, that's not out of bounds. So it just might be out of bounds to his. And now that gives double motive for Sandra, right?
Right.
She wanted to quit the job. She's going to turn in her notice. And all, by the way, her husband slept with her boss.
And here's the thing, Captain, you present a very interesting angle that I wasn't thinking about. When you said that he had been fired when Frank had been let go, I believe one report I read stated that he was fired by Mark Sievers.
Right.
Just so we should probably clear this up here, just in case anybody's wondering. Dr. Teresa Sievers, she's obviously the doctor. She's the practicing medicine, right?
Right.
Mark Sievers, her husband, was a office manager. He kind of ran the office for her. Mm-hmm. So this would have made him, you know, you...
Office manager as far as the building, probably security of people, but not like running records and stuff like that back and forth.
Yeah, so you have other people working there. Sandra, you have Frank working there as well. But these people would have also been working under Mark Sievers as
right.
well.
Right.
So the thing here is, we should also be clear that, because we were kind of dancing around this and talking through it at the same time, but just so everybody is clear, Frank was not sleeping with Dr. Teresa.
Right.
They did not have any type of relationship other than a working relationship.
Well, Frank and his wife, which both worked for the Sievers, didn't know that they had an open marriage.
Right.
Or that they did any kind of swinging
mm-hmm.
at all. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get a bunch of letters about open marriages and swinging, look, every couple and their relationship has kind of different set of rules and guidelines
mm-hmm.
that the relationship creates. So I'm not going to try to speculate at all what was in bounds and out of bounds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because obviously close people that worked with them didn't even know that they had this type of relationship. So it'd be tough for us to, because there's a lot of rumors, and we can get to this a little bit later, but there was also rumors that Mark had multiple girlfriends.
Yes, he did.
Right. And there's a lot of text evidence of this. The problem I have with them saying that, therefore, that is motive for the husband, which we know is
mm-hmm.
so far away. My problem with it is, was that in bounds or out of bounds as far as his relationship went?
So they have released, I mean, the state of Florida, they have released like 10,000 text messages back and forth between Teresa and Mark.
We're going to read them all tomorrow.
Yes. It's going to be 3 hours of texting. I'll be reading the part of Dr. Teresa Sievers, and the captain will be reading the part of Mark Sievers.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in. I bet you can't wait.
It's going to be hot.
No.
Steamy.
No, we're not going to do that. I only brought that up because while you say that he had other relationships, now keep in mind, this appears to be an open marriage at points of this marriage. I want to be clear about that. It doesn't appear that this was going on throughout the entirety of the marriage.
Right.
But at portions of their marriage, they had what appears to be an open marriage, meaning that they both had other relationships. And not only did they both have other relationships, and the captain brings up Mark having possible other girlfriends or other encounters with women, let's say.
Right.
It appears through those text messages, and it's actually quite obvious that Teresa knew about these other women, that Mark communicated to her about them and about things that were going on. And not only did she know about them, it also appears from her text that she was not only just okay with it, but at times may have encouraged it.
Yeah. But this whole situation is a little odd because, again, I've never been in an open relationship. It's not for me. Not something that
every time I'm single, I'm in an open relationship.
When I'm single, I'm in open relationships. The door is open. But I've had friends. A good friend of mine out in L.A. Of course, it has to be an L.A. thing.
There you go.
But they were together for a long time, and then it was like, we're going to try this open relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed very... I still remember him saying, well, we can do this because we're so mature. And I thought, okay, well, let's see how well this goes.
Right.
But it went well for a while. But they did end up having a fallout. And so just because, okay, so on two sides, one, just because you have girlfriends doesn't mean that you have motive or there's motive to get rid of your wife. But that also doesn't mean that there isn't motive. Just because she knows about the relationship, what if you fall in love with one of them? And then you're like, well, I love her. Now I got to get rid of this one.
Well, and I think what you and I can agree on here over beers is that regardless of what their relationship
don't look at me in the eyes when you say
regardless of what their relationship was and what the rules of their, you know, engagement was.
Right.
That however they choose to live their lives doesn't make them good or bad based off of that. They're not, you can't throw them in the good person or bad person category just because of this.
Oh, definitely not.
So I think here's what I want to do though. So I do want to bring up too, that there was also something else that was, go ahead.
My point though, was that you can't, you know, if it seems in this open relationship that if people are mature enough, then there wouldn't be jealousy issues. I'm just saying that that kind of stuff can stop on a dime,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, it's really not that big of a deal. And then one day
it becomes a big deal.
Exactly.
I get you. Okay. All right. But the one thing I wanted to bring up here, as I see that we're running out of time and out of,
well, now that we're
liquid encouragement.
Well, now that we're open marriage experts and swinger experts,
Dr. Laura. Manning the phones.
Well, I did meet a couple one time in the hot tub, you know.
There you go. At one point, there was something that was learned during police questioning. And remember the members of a local security service having been seen talking to the police outside the Seavers home?
Yeah.
And even entering the home?
Well, they had a security system.
Yes. Yes. They had the Seavers owned. And which, if you can afford it, I recommend this to everyone. Get
this
a security
system.
This
is not a paid sponsor.
They owned a home security system. The police found the system to be in good working and operating fashion. The home was being monitored by the security company. So why and how did the attacker or attackers get into the good doctor's home and attack her?
Right.
The police had the security monitoring company out at the crime scene. Because they wanted them to be able to decipher something very important. The police wondered, could they have somehow tricked the security system?
Mm-hmm.
Or
did they know the code?
Right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you do have to wonder, obviously, or maybe Teresa had just disarmed the alarm when she got there and did not set it when the attacker decided to enter the home or get into the home.
Which is possible. The other possibility is that the family was gone on vacation, the whole family. And they were having Teresa's mother.
Mark's mother.
Mark's mother, my bad. Mark's mother come into the house and look after the dogs.
Yeah, so they have dogs. Mark's mother, Bonnie Seavers. We should be clear. The monitoring company emphatically told the police this system has not been interfered with.
Right.
Nobody tricked this system. So then they have to figure out, okay, was the system on and off? And they can get these records, and they got them from the monitoring company.
Uh-huh.
What they were able to conclude from talking to Bonnie Sievers, Mark's mother, as well as going to the records of the times that the monitoring system was armed or disarmed.
Well, and also talking with Mark as well.
Yeah. The dogs were to be let out and fed a few times each day. And Bonnie Sievers would come over two or three times a day, usually in the morning and then again in the evening, and she would collect the mail, she would feed the dogs, she would let them out, these sorts of things. According to the monitoring records, on Sunday morning, Bonnie Sievers, just after 8 a.m., she reactivated the alarm system. Then later that day, this is around 4 p.m., Mark Sievers, from all the way in Connecticut, spoke on the phone with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
She said that she had had some trouble with the Sievers alarm system. It wasn't working or operating the way she thought it should. And Mark, at that point, instructed his mother that since this was on Sunday, that since she was having trouble with it, it wouldn't be necessary for her to set the alarm when she left for the last time that day, because Teresa would be home later that night.
Right.
So at 4:13 p.m., Bonnie Sievers went to the home, tended to the dogs, and left the Sievers residence without arming the alarm system. Until tomorrow, everybody stay safe out there. Be good, be kind, and don't litter.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.